Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Well, another Brexit deadline has been set for this Sunday. So many of the headlines this week and today highlighting various different concerns, which are, there are many, of course, if there is to be a no trade deal Brexit. And what impact would that have on Ireland? Maybe you've been getting emails from different .co.uk companies you've ordered with online already. Well, on the line to break it down for us and tell us a little bit about how the Brexit negotiations are going and what Ireland will face if there is a no deal, we have Neil Richmond, who's a TD for Fine Gael and spokesperson on European Affairs. Neil, thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So tell us what's been happening this week on the Brexit front.
Well, we're at the very last stages of negotiations. There was a big dinner between Boris Johnson and Ursula von der Leyen, and they've given till Sunday for the negotiators to try and get a final agreement on a Brexit deal, although there are three big areas where there's a huge, I suppose, distance between the two sides. And we'll know on Sunday whether or not we're entering 2021 with a deal Brexit or a no-deal Brexit. Parallel to that, and it's important to mention for Irish listeners, is that we did finally get a clarity in relation to the Northern Irish Protocol, which had already been agreed, but we will now be able to see how it will be implemented. That'll ensure there's no hardening of the border on the island of Ireland, which is so important to so many of us.
Yeah, and of course was a sticking point not so long ago. What were the key points of negotiation then, and what are the sticking points likely to be over the coming days between now and Sunday?
So there's three issues that, to be honest, have been the same for the last 3 months as they will be for the next 3 days. The first is fishing, so allowing the EU and EU vessels continued access in some form or the other to British waters. The second area and third areas are related. So when you do a trade deal with the EU, they insist on what's known as the so-called level playing field. That ensures that standards are met in relation to making sure that, you know, beef doesn't have angel dust put into it, but equally that governments don't try and undercut each other by artificially inflating industry. And then tied to that is making sure that there's a governance tool to ensure that any disputes can be resolved between the two parties. Unfortunately, there's still rather large gaps, and it all comes down to the British perception of sovereignty. But when you do a deal with the EU, there's certain base things that the EU do. It's the world's largest economic bloc. It's in a position to do that. So realistically, if it's going to be resolved in the next few days, it's going to require a political decision in London.
And do you think it's going to be resolved, Neil?
It's an absolute coin toss, to be honest, Wendy. I have an element of hope, and it's important to have an element of hope, but certainly the readouts from the European Council currently in Brussels, the Prime Minister made a typically rambunctious intervention last night in London as well, and they're both veering closer to no deal than deal, which will have very serious repercussions.
In terms of the repercussions, Neil, for Ireland, if there is a no deal, what are going to be the impacts in the new year? What can we expect?
Well, there's certain things that we can expect, deal or no deal. And there's now going to be a customs barrier between Great Britain and Ireland, which means things are going to take a lot longer to come through. And if you're in business, you have to make sure that you still be able to get your products from GB or send them back. But if there's a no deal, you'll see the immediate introduction of tariffs and quotas, which are essentially taxes on imported and exported goods. That's really worrying for particularly Irish farmers. The beef industry, the dairy industry export huge amounts to the UK. Pretty much every McDonald's hamburger in Great Britain is Irish beef, and there'd be a 40% tariff put on that. So if things are going to become vastly more expensive, people will buy less of it. Equally, we import an awful lot of stuff from Great Britain, and they're all going to become a lot more expensive. And then the general economic hit of a no-deal Brexit, we're already seeing the currency markets fluctuating, but you could see the pound going down to parity with the euro. You could see a really worrying vista. We're in the grips of a really bad economic cycle now because of the pandemic. It's the worst one the UK has faced in 300 years. But throwing a no-deal Brexit on top of that, it's going to take at least 2% off GDP, which would be really worrying, and it will make for a very bleak winter. As I said, the country that suffers the most is the UK, although on an EU perspective, obviously Ireland is the most exposed.
Do you think, Neil, that just the average person is kind of aware of just some of the impacts that we might face if there is a no deal?
Look, to be honest with you, there's a serious amount of Brexit fatigue in the negotiating team. For people like me who've been across this for the past 5 years, it's completely understandable that people have faced into the pandemic. They're maybe been out of work for quite some time, particularly people who are maybe singers who are used to gigging across Ireland and the UK or something like that. And Brexit seems to be this continuous cycle Yes, of course, the vast majority of people have tuned out. However, particularly the business community, we've been working very hard, be it with local chambers of commerce, the pillar banks, to try and ensure people are as best prepared as possible. That's fine if you're a big company with loads of employees and you can point a Brexit officer, but if you're in an SME that only has 3 employees, you're the head of sales, you're the marketing director, you're the chief cleaner, and all of a sudden you've become the Brexit officer, it can become a bit too much for some people. But we're trying our best, and there's loads of resources available. If anyone is just happening to listen to this and go, like, I need to check something, if they go on to gov.ie/Brexit, there's a checklist there. There's also quite a lot of grants and loans available there in order to help you prepare for getting a customs agent, or if you need some cash flow to get you through the first 3 months of the year.
Do you think, Neil, and you touched on a little bit, but that there is a strong possibility of even, obviously, price hikes on everyday items that we buy? I know there's so many examples, but one is we get loads of flour from the UK. Our wheat isn't great here, that they might increase in price, but there also might be delays and kind of empty shelves in a lot of cases.
For sure, like, there's a guarantee that there will be price hikes, deal or no deal, to be honest. The logistics constraints of having that. I don't think we're going to have empty shelves, and I'll tell you why. About 2 years ago, we actioned our Brexit ready plan, and that allowed Ireland to move from what's known as a real-time supply chain to a 3 or 4 day. So when the pandemic broke out, a lot of this was put into practice. So in March, April, we didn't have that run on toilet paper or bread or anything else. However, that did happen in the UK, who still operate on a real-time basis. But there will be certain products that just won't be viable to ship into Ireland anymore. We actually import more from Great Britain than we export. We do have about 28 medicines on a watch list. Now, these aren't necessarily common medicines that most people would take, but they might be very particular cancer treatments or something else like that. But we've moved from a 6-week to a 12-week stockpile of those. So we're as best prepared as we can be for those big stuff. But as I said, the economic hit is going to be massive one way or the other.
In terms of, and obviously you've given some insight, Neil, in terms of the economic impact, but there is plans in place and contingency plans in place if there is a no deal, and there is a large fund from the EU, a Brexit fund, that's there to try and help.
Yeah, so the last two budgets that have been formed in this country by both this government and the previous government have been written on the basis that there's no deal, Brexit is more likely. So domestically, the government has set up a €3.4 billion Brexit recovery fund. In addition, the EU has a Brexit adjustment fund, and also we have the COVID recovery fund of €750 billion that can take into account these factors. So that's why we've already got European intervention to build up the port of Rosslare so we can ship direct to the continent. We have a new energy connector being built that links Ireland to France, because all the other energy we import comes through Great Britain. And certainly there's certain sectors that, if it is no deal, you think about the beef sector, that it was already struggling before this anyway, but that's one that's of particular concern, that's so exposed to the British market. But we will have some funds in there as best possible. But really, the biggest thing that we're working on is that diversification. So if you're a business, to sell a lot more into continental Europe directly, looking at the markets that are open beyond Great Britain. When we joined the EEC in 1973, 55% of our exports went to Great Britain. It's down to 9% now, and it offers a lot of opportunities. It's also making sure that on a practical level, that we've guaranteed things, that if people had worked in England for a few years, that they're still able to draw their pension entitlements, that if they get sick in Manchester or somewhere, that they can still get medical treatment. And there's a huge impact on the north-south basis, so Irish citizens in the north will be able to continue to have a European health insurance card. Students will be able to continue to avail of Erasmus. That school buses will still be able to travel from Donegal to Derry and back. Real practical stuff. That sort of preparedness has been done. We've had to do Brexit omnibus bills go through the Dáil in the last couple of years. But it's the overall economic impact of a no-deal Brexit in the grips of a once-in-a-century pandemic. It's really quite worrying. I still hold out hope for a deal in the coming days, but I think it's really quite very difficult at this point.
Yeah, we'll just have to wait to see what happens on Sunday. Thanks so much for joining us on the programme today. That's TD Neil Richmond. He is Fine Gael's spokesperson on European affairs. Spirit. The abortion legislation in Ireland is due to be reviewed next year. Already here at Spirit Radio, we've covered the horrific stories of recent disclosures in a University College Cork study that highlighted evidence that babies that survived the abortion procedure here in Ireland have been left to die without receiving any medical care or support. Perhaps now more than ever, it's crucial for a new group called the Oireachtas Life and Dignity Group to form, because they're going to be looking at addressing these and other issues relating to life. On the line to tell us more about this new group, we have one of its members, who's independent TD, Carol Nolan, and she's co-chair of the newly formed Oireachtas Life and Dignity Group. Carol, thanks for joining us on the programme.
Good morning, Wendy, and good morning to your listeners.
So why did you decide to form this group and what's its purpose?
Well, look, there's a lot of senators and TDs who hold the same position as ourselves, who are socially conservative and worry about the different issues, such as the issue of life and the fact that we have that study, as you mentioned, from UCC, which shows how horrific the legislation is. And we feel that, look, we need to be a voice for unborn babies. And also in terms of other issues that exist as well, where there are injustices, and, you know, if we look at freedom of conscience issues to do with human trafficking and all of that. So there is a need for a group. And indeed, this group builds on what the last group, the Human Dignity Group, did, which was established in 2008. So we hope to build on that good work that has already been done to reach out to other TDs and senators who mightn't have the same views as ourselves, but might be willing to maybe attend some of our briefings or attend discussions. And that's what the group is about, initiating discussion and making sure that issues such as the pain relief issue to do with late-term abortions is brought to light. And indeed, we've published a report on that very issue, which we launched a couple of weeks ago at the Dáil. And we look forward to discussing the content of that with others of like mind and others who are not of like mind.
And what was the tell us a little bit, Carol, about what was in the report and the response that you got to it.
Well, the report highlighted some studies. One study was from Professor Derbyshire. It's actually a study done only this year, which came to light, which shows that babies can feel pain at 12 weeks because the nervous system and brain is sufficiently developed. So it's bringing forward new evidence in terms of babies feeling pain. And as we know, that was completely dismissed during the abortion legislation debate. The expertise that of course, was biased that we were shown at that time, and indeed that many of the TDs and indeed the Minister for Health was presenting. So this new evidence is crucial in the sense that it shows what we've always believed. You know, a lot of us did believe that this was going to be an issue, and sure enough, we have the evidence now. So the report brings forward that, and also it lays out, I suppose, a vision that we want for pain relief to be prescribed on a precautionary principle for all babies undergoing abortion, a late-term abortion. And I mean, it is shocking that we're discussing this very issue for those of us that are completely opposed to abortion to be at this stage now pleading for something reasonable as pain relief.
So it's an ounce of humanity you're asking for.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was, of course, I'm sure members of this group, Carol, were those who at the time tried to table an amendment that would have allowed pain relief that our government rejected.
We did. We did table all of those amendments, Wendy, and they were rejected at all stages, dismissed and scoffed at. When we did get a chance to speak, we were shouted down a lot of the time. But, I mean, it just seems so cruel that here we have this situation on our hands. I mean, if we look at what's in place in terms of the Animal Welfare Act 2013, it allows pain relief to be prescribed by a vet if an animal is in pain. And here we are as a nation with this crisis on our hands. And I don't believe that a lot of the Irish people realised how very serious this legislation was. And unfortunately, the voices of the minority weren't heard. And now we're trying to, put out the facts. And that's what our report is about.
And did you get much media interest in the report, Carol?
We got a little bit, Wendy. Not as much as we would have liked. But again, I suppose the media has, national media, most channels have kind of blocked out or shut out the pro-life voices.
And you must find that very frustrating.
very frustrating. But we're going to continue to challenge, and we're going to continue to put out the facts. And the, you know, it's good to have a radio show like your show and Spirit FM, and also Gripped, and there are other platforms, the Irish Catholic and other platforms that are covering these stories. But little by little, we'll chip away, and hopefully we'll get the facts out to people.
I mentioned it earlier, Carol, you made some very powerful interventions in the Dáil recently about that UCC study that was really difficult to read. Tell us a little bit about your interventions in the Dáil and the response that you got from the Minister of State for Health to your remarks.
Well, we tabled a topical issue last week on the pain relief issue and on the issue of babies being born alive. It was, I suppose, initiated by Deputy Matthew McGrath, and all of the pro-life TDs in the Dáil got in behind it. We didn't actually have our question taken by the Minister for Health, who seemed to be unavailable at the time. We had the question taken by the Minister of State, Frank Feehan. It was extremely frustrating because we were bringing forward facts that have been brought to light by medical professionals themselves. It's medical professionals that informed the UCC study and reports of doctors becoming ill in the corridors after dealing with abortions and that sort of thing. The minister read from a script. He didn't take anything on board.
So this was pre-prepared, in other words, before he'd heard your remarks.
Absolutely. Yeah. He didn't show any recognition or acknowledgement or indeed compassion for anything we were saying, and he read a script, and it was highly insulting, and I just feel totally unacceptable, because there are serious problems now within the medical profession. There's conflict among medical professionals on the issue of fetal abnormalities and pain relief, and we feel that, look, it needs to be taken by government. The action needs to be taken. They're responsible for the legislation that they enacted. And, it's just dreadful that they can detach themselves or disconnect themselves from something so serious, and to be calling on them to put in humane actions or take humane actions is absolutely, it's unbelievable. You know, we've become a barbaric nation.
So I would imagine, Carol, then you would hope one of the things that this group can do is to continue that pressure. What's the plans into the new year for this group?
Well, what we're going to continue to do, hopefully, when we get out the other end of this pandemic, what we will be doing is holding meetings and briefings and inviting experts on different areas who specialise in certain areas, and we'll be inviting them in to give talks. We'll be inviting our colleagues in the Oireachtas, senators and TDs, and indeed the media, are welcome to attend, and that's going to be, I suppose, the platform for it, is discussions. You know, we need to have discussions on these issues, and what we want to do as a group is not shy away from the issues that might be perceived as contentious by some people. We need to deal with these issues. You know, there's very serious issues at play, and we need to deal with them, and we need to talk about them. They can't be swept under the carpet.
Indeed. Well, Carol, thanks so much for joining us on the programme today. That's Independent TD Carol Nolan there, the co-chair of the newly formed Life and Dignity Group. Spirit. Well, the All-Ireland Hurling Final, one of the biggest occasions of the sporting calendar, has been plunged from the height of summer into the depths of winter, because last year's final was actually played in August, but of course, because of COVID disruption, this year's final has just managed to squeeze in before Christmas. And of course, there'll be no crowd in Croker this Sunday, but there is sure to be huge interest in the game, which will decide whether Limerick or Waterford will lift the Liam McCarthy Cup. Well, with me to preview the game, I have our GAA analyst, Cormac Cowell. Morning, Cormac, how are you?
Morning, Wendy. Very good, yourself?
So it's a good achievement, isn't it, by players and organisers to get to this point with everything that's been going on?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, given where we were a couple of months ago and earlier on in the year, when we didn't think we'd have anything to do and watch or whatever, I think it's been fantastic to be able to get it there, to get it there safely as well. Okay, there are restrictions, of course, that we all know about, but I think, look, it's on. It's going to be really interesting, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Of course, for all involved, it's a dream come true to be playing in an All-Ireland final. But I'd imagine it'd be tinged with sadness, because the players that are going to be there, they can't perform in front of their families. They can't play in front of their families, their friends, and their county supporters. That element is going to be missing.
That is going to be missing, absolutely. There's no homecomings. They won't even be able to bring the cup home. And I suppose I can understand it, you know, because like if Waterford win, they'll go absolutely bananas. There's no doubt about it. It'll be kind of like Mayo in the football, Waterford being the hurling, you know, they'll go absolutely cracked. So I can kind of understand that. But at the end of the day, you know, these things, like this will be spoken of for years to come as the COVID All-Ireland. I heard a comment that they still go on about the Thunder and Lightning final, which was, I think, in 1938 or 9 or something like that. That's still referred back to because of the weather conditions that were there at the time, you know. I know it was Kilkenny, I know it was Cork involved as well, I'm not too sure, but this will be remembered for eons as the COVID All-Ireland. I don't think it'll take from the winning of it. I think the Hurling Championship has been fantastic this year, and you know, it's you're left with the medal and the memories. Okay, yeah, they might be a little bit different, but
and on the one hand, Cormac, I guess it's hard to not have supporters and family there. But on the other hand, maybe the players might underestimate what they're actually giving people, as in terms of being able to even just sit and watch this. That this is actually happening at all, and to give them that hope, to give them that uplift, to give them that excitement, to give us something to talk about other than COVID.
Absolutely, it's huge, and like the excitement. And I think John Milan, bless John Milan, like, I mean, he's an absolutely fantastic man, you know, he wears his passion on his sleeve. And he told a story that I think when he was watching the last match at home with his wife and his two-year-old kid, and after Waterford scored a goal, his wife was so excited that she threw the two-year-old into the Christmas tree, right? Now, he said this himself, so I'm not, you know, this is said in the press, I'm not kind of breaking any trust or gossiping here or anything. He told it himself because, you know, that's funny. But it also, I think, epitomises and demonstrates the excitement that people have at home, you know, that this, like, you can see, and I think the GA have these ads on for the hurling, and they see the fans at home and going bananas. And I'm one of those, and even from a neutral point of view, when I don't have skin in the game, so to speak, the Cork aren't playing, I get fiercely excited. And as you say, it's a gloomy time of the year. I know we're coming up to Christmas and that's lovely, but you know, you have dank weather, and as you say, the COVID is hanging around in the background all the time, and this is a real kind of, this is like a rainbow, you know. This,
yeah, is that's a great of way of putting it, Cormac. Is it fair to say that this year's final has a favourite?
I would think Limerick are favourites, but like I would nearly back Waterford.
You're going for the underdog.
Yeah, there's something about the way Waterford are playing. Like Liam Cahill, their manager, he's a Tip man. Like, he's done an awful lot in All-Ireland finals with Tip at minor and under 21 level. So he's as experienced as John Kiely, the Limerick manager. And he's got him playing in such a way, like he made, as I said the last time, he's made a couple of hard calls. But I think Waterford have gone back to, so there's no messing involved, right? He's not tolerating anything but hard work, but he's also leaving him play that kind of, that dashing way that Waterford were known for, that off-the-cuff kind of a play that they do. And I wouldn't back against them. I just have a sneaking suspicion for Waterford. They're both, like I suppose, they're both coming at it from slightly different perspectives. Limerick won it for the first time since 1973 in 2018. What they're trying to do is cement themselves as a great team. But what Waterford are trying to do is, we say, break through the glass ceiling, because they haven't won it in 60 years. So, and I don't think that they're going to. I just have a notion about this team that I think, you know, they sort of slightly sort of misfired in 2008 with that brilliant team against Kilkenny. But that was Kilkenny at their peak. They've beaten Kilkenny on the way to this. They've beaten Cork on the way to this, two of the traditional big powers. They beat Clare as well on the way. They may not get as much kudos for this. And they ran Limerick to 4 points in the Munster final. They have nothing to fear. And I genuinely think the way they played in the second half against Kilkenny the last time was just absolutely outstanding, you know. And I wouldn't back against them.
Oh, there you go. Everyone loves an underdog, don't they? Well, except anybody who's listening to us from Limerick this morning, of course. What about Limerick in terms of why they are such a good team?
Well, I think that like they have just a great way about them, you know. They have a half back line and a half forward line. The half back of Burns and Hannon and Kyle Hayes, and the half forward line of Gerard Hegarty, Keane Lynch and Tom Morrissey. They're powerful, big men. They play a kind of a controlled style of hurling, I suppose, in a sense that they try to work it up through the lines. Like they have Aaron Gillan, who was, you know, a fabulous player. Now, I've heard that Aaron Gillan kind of got heavy knock in the semi-final. He may not be 100%. But I think, you know, they're young, they're bullying for it. they play a great style of hurling, and I think their manager really complements them, you know. And like Limerick, you know, an awful lot of people, when they think Limerick, they think rugby, but an awful lot of Limerick people would say to you that hurling has always been hugely traditionally strong in Limerick, and maybe is overtaking hurling, or maybe is overtaking rugby in recent times as well. So they are really passionate. They're always a sleeping giant, and I think that their style of play, the size of them, they're huge men, their style of play suits the modern game, you know, the way they work it up through lines. Everything is kind of rehearsed to an extent. I think they're a fantastic team. They're a real good team, but they don't have, to my way of thinking, they don't have that air of invincibility that we say Kilkenny had in the past. So I don't think the Waterford would be massively intimidated by them. And like, you know, people sort of going about, you know, it's an All-Ireland hurling final, we're really looking forward to it. But I think it's the novel pairing really makes this one something that, like, I'm really looking forward to. Yes, of course, you always look forward to it. But if it was, we say, Kilkenny and Tipperary or Waterford and Tip again, you'd be saying, or sorry, Galway and Tip again, you'd be kind of thinking, yeah, this is great. But Limerick and Waterford is such a unique pairing, and they're both really hungry for it, and I think that's why this is one that I'm really, really looking forward to.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are. No matter what, it's going to be a great match. And of course, you've given us your prediction of Waterford Cormac, so we'll have to see if you've hit the nail on the head this time. Thanks a million for joining us on the programme today, and enjoy watching the match.
My pleasure. Talk to you again.
That's Cormac Cahill, our GAA analyst. And Waterford versus Limerick takes place this Sunday at Croke Park in Dublin. Throw-in time is 3:30, and of course we wish both teams and all their supporters the very best for a brilliant day of sport. Spirit. Today, our Christmas countdown guest is TV and radio broadcaster Colm Flynn. I never know where in the world I'm going to find him because he's always working and jet-setting in different countries. Great to have you with us on the show this morning, Colm. How are you?
Wendy, to what do I owe the pleasure of speaking to you on this fine Friday morning?
Well, to the fact that hopefully you'll be an amazing Christmas countdown guest. Tell us a little bit about, I think you started off the year in lockdown in New York, did you?
Yeah, and first of all, when, you know, the good folks at Spirit Radio, when they contacted me to do the Christmas countdown, I thought, my goodness, they're stuck. But here I am, and I'm very grateful to be on and talk to you, Wendy. And the last time we spoke, I think it was I was probably in New York, because right now I'm sitting in the Eternal City. I'm sitting right next door to the Vatican in Rome. I moved here 2 months ago from New York. So I was meant to move back in April, but as you know, that's when the virus was just really taking off, and Italy was one of the worst affected countries in Europe and in the world, so I had to stay put in New York. And then ironically, New York became the worst affected, the epicenter of the global pandemic. So I stayed in New York for a few months covering the virus, covering different stories around it. And then 2 months ago, I have moved to Rome, and that's where I am now, Wendy.
So what's life like in Bella Roma, Colm?
You know, Roma is always Bella, even though at the moment they are seeing a spike in the numbers again, and the restrictions are not as bad as they were back in April. So, for example, you can still go into coffee shops here. You can go in and get a glass of wine at lunch, if you please, or some whatever, meet your friends. But at 6 o'clock, everything closes. So you can't go in and sit down anywhere. And then there's a curfew at 10 p.m. You have to be at home and in your house at 10 p.m. But people are keeping the spirits up, and they're making the most of it. They're keeping their distances. They're wearing masks. The one thing is, of course, you know, the heart of the Catholic Church here and the Christmas, there's huge events and celebrations. And the news just came out yesterday, Wendy, that the traditional midnight mass in St. Peter's Basilica has been changed this year. They're not allowed to have it. So they're having midnight mass at 7:30 p.m. on Christmas Eve. So people are making the most of it here, and they're still smiling and they're still trying to embrace
which is good to hear. So tell us, we got to get to your Christmas questions now, Colm. So tell us about a Christmas memory from your childhood.
A Christmas memory, Wendy, from my childhood. I remember when I was in primary school, I forget what class, but myself and my brother and sister, Patrick and Noinan, we were probably not as good as gold. We were probably misbehaving and fighting, and as you do. And one day when we woke up, my mom said to us, you better be good, because this morning when I got up, I saw an elf, one of Santa's helpers, run across the garden. And we were all like, we were getting to that age, and we were like, yeah, whatever, you know, we need proof. And then sure enough, she brought us out to the back garden, and in the bush, there was bits of ripped red cloth. And we all were astounded. And this was the proof that Santa's little helper had been peeping in the window. And then from that moment on, we were as good as gold. And I remember going in and telling my teacher, telling my class, and I kept telling them for the next couple of years that we saw the remnants of one of Santa's little helpers as he ran back to the North Pole. So I've been well behaved ever since then as well.
I'm sure you have. The elves are always watching, just remember that. So what about a low light for you, Colm, from 2020?
2020, low light, I would have to say when the pandemic hit New York and most of the people I knew moved back to Ireland, or the Americans went back to other parts of the United States. Because remember, in New York, 33%, a third of the population of the city, they're from somewhere else, they're immigrants, and they come for their dreams or their jobs or whatever. So when the pandemic hit and everything shut down, everybody left. So New York kind of became a ghost city. But I remember when we were filming, we went up to a funeral home in upstate New York and we filmed a piece for RTE with a funeral director, and his funeral home was just overrun with bodies coming in and there were coffins. And that was the lowest point, to see the, because we kept hearing about the numbers of the coronavirus on the news, but to see people in front of you and families and brothers and sisters, that was the lowest point, probably.
And coupled with, as you say, the fact that it was a ghost city and so many people had left, it must have been really difficult. Okay, to the happy bit now, what about a highlight from 2020?
I think a highlight, and I know it's a cliche, Wendy, when people say the worst situations bring out the best in people, but it's true. It's a cliche for a reason, because it really does happen. And one of the highlights was a guy I got to interview called Mario Salerno, and he was an Italian-American landlord in Brooklyn. Now, most landlords in New York, you wouldn't become friends with them tomorrow, let's put it that way. But this guy was a tough Italian New Yorker with a heart of gold. And when the coronavirus hit and his tenants were really struggling, he had 200 tenants across Brooklyn. Now, Brooklyn is a pricey place to live. They were paying top dollar. He told all of his tenants, you don't have to pay any rent for the month of April. You don't have to pay it back. You free rent for a month. And getting to spend a day with him and just see how he was being so kind to other people and to interview the tenants, that was one of the highlights. And getting to share that with people all over the world.
Yeah, and uplifting people through your work and to share that story of generosity. And the more of that stuff, the better. What about something you'd recommend for us this Christmas, Colm?
And just to go back on that very quickly, the interesting thing was when I interviewed him, I asked him, why did you do this? And he said his faith in God, his belief in Jesus, that's what drove him, which was very interesting. But the next question was something, what was it?
Something you'd recommend for us this Christmas.
Oh, what would I recommend? I would recommend patience. I know that at Christmas, you can often have a short fuse when it comes to all the family being crammed together. And I know this year, it might be even harder when half of the family is on Zoom and half the family don't know how to use Zoom. But as I say to my brother and sister, we say to each other, and patience, extra patience this year, and be thankful for everyone we have around us. And think of the people who don't have those around them because of the awful year that we've had.
Yeah, it's a good thing to focus on, and I for sure can never stop working on it. I think I'll be working on it till the day I die, trying to be more patient. So how are you going to be celebrating Christmas this year then, Colm?
I don't know. That's the honest answer. I'm trying to find out if I can go back to Ireland safely. The rules are changing here all the time in Italy in terms of if you travel abroad, which countries are green, which are amber, which are red, and then if you come back, if you have to quarantine. I have to go to New York in January for a week for a work thing, and I have to quarantine when I come back from that. So I'm trying to figure out if I'm able to safely go see my family in Ireland. I haven't seen them, Wendy, since January. And I missed them terribly, my mom and dad in County Clare, Tom and Noreen. So I'm trying to figure out if I can go see them or if they can come here just after Christmas. So we'll wait to see.
Please, God, you get to see your family soon, Colm. What about a hope for 2021?
A hope for 2021 is that I don't disgrace myself here at the Vatican or disgrace the network I work for, that everything is just goes well. I'm joking. I think just that, you know, the whole world comes back to some sort of normality, and that this virus dissipates and disappears, and that we can get back to normal and we can get close to people again, and that everyone is uplifted.
Yeah, I think we all hope for that. Well, Colm, thank you so much for being our Christmas countdown guest today. We will be on the lookout for you for your brilliant work that you're doing, and I'm looking at your Twitter online, looking at you in front of the Vatican, and dreaming of a day where I can go back to Bellaroma myself. Thanks for joining us on the programme today.
Thank you so much, Wendy, and thanks to everyone there at Spirit Radio for having me on, and keep up the great work.
Thank you so much. That's Colm Flynn, TV and radio broadcaster. If you want to connect up with Colm, by the way, you can go to his very own website, colmflynn.com.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.